You are listening to episode number 180 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Tomahawk Chop!
Now with 33.33% less Mighty Warriors than last week.
Hold up, Elton. Hold up. Not yet, Elton. Hold up. Let the beat ride for 1 second. Now, go ahead, John. Go ahead, John. I like that. Yeah. Let's move it out. Let's move it out.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a very, very sparse edition of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
He ain't lying, folks. It is very sparse.
I am your host, the marvelous Icky. Iggy, not Icky.
Icky.
A.K.A.
You gonna do the Icky Shuffle?
No, but I love that commercial. I wanna be that. I wanna be that excited. And I think I am sometimes, but I learn to calm it down because you're always gonna get that one guy who rolls their eyes at you. But
I'm just wondering where the hell they dug him up. Like he was.
Well, he's. I mean, he probably wasn't. I don't think he was doing anything. So probably was.
No, like, I don't think so either. But still, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it was. I mean, who doesn't know the Icky Shuffle?
Everyone knows the Icky Shuffle.
Like, come on, even if you don't know, never seen it, you know what the Icky Shuffle is.
Oh, sure.
That and the Super Bowl Shuffle.
Yeah. I didn't even know what his name was. I just thought it was Icky something, something, something.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
But his last name was Shuffle for a while there.
Yeah, I'm surprised he did. You know what? If he was a player in today's world, he would have had changed his last name to Shuffle.
Yeah, no shit.
Chad Ocho Cinco, I'm looking at you. Anyways, this is not the NFL podcast. We are joining me.
Not? Oh, man.
Is from Boston, Massachusetts. Not Boston. West Newbury. No, that's the other guy's hometown.
No, I am not John Cena or any part of the Cena clan.
No.
Where are you from? I am from Randolph.
Randolph, Massachusetts. Okay.
Predominantly Vietnamese people and Haitians.
Really?
So,
that's north. Yeah. That's North Austin for me, but I'm further southeast.
There you go.
Even a huge Chinatown thing. Like you can take the bus all the way up there. It's pretty cool. Actually, yeah, it's pretty cool. Have a big dragon thing and everything.
Ooh.
But as you can hear, you don't hear two older gentlemen. It's just because they have both unfortunately have decided to sit out. So instead of not doing the episode, Brian and I have decided to deliver Two Man Power Trip Part 2. So
Part 2, baby.
So there you go. It's going to be a very short episode. But hopefully next week we'll be back at full strength. I definitely know I have some announcements at the end, but we'll get to that later. So let's kick it off with some news. B-Rive, what's first up on the docket?
All right, let's dive into the world of mutants first, shall we? In multimedia news, we have word that Fox is planning to release an extended cut of X-Men Days of Future Past titled the Rogue Cut, quote-unquote. This edition will add more than 10 minutes of extra footage to the movie, centering around Paquin's character of Rogue, reprised for this film, whereas in the original cut, she was pretty much removed from the story altogether. Like, I don't even think they mention her once in that movie, aside from her brief little glimpse at the end.
She had a cameo at the end? I don't remember. That's how forgettable she is. Well,
you know...
Okay, I take that back.
Okay, don't be like that.
Okay, no, I really liked her performance as Rogue in X-Men 1. She kind of disappeared into the background in X2, and she became whiny and so unrememberable in X3. But that's not her fault. That's from terrible writing and a terrible director, so I don't blame that on her.
Brett Ratner?
No, yeah, fuck Brett Ratner. He can't, no. He's,
okay, I thought you were talking about Bryan Singer for a second. I'm like, hoping he's talking about.
I think he did a really good job with Rogue, and I was really, because, you know, You're only a couple of years younger than me, but like if you watch the X-Men animated series, it was Rogue and Jubilee and Storm in terms of X-Women. You know, those are ones.
I saw enough of that to get the gist of it, but yeah, I get it.
You know, so that being said, about the whole Rogue cut, that's not coming out in a couple of weeks, but rather it's coming out next year.
The first half of 2015.
So January to March, probably February, if I would bet anything. Like I feel like one of two things. One, they wanted to do this, but Fox wouldn't let them until at the last minute they did, and by that point the DVD, the Blu-rays and the DVD copies were already ready to be shipped out, so they couldn't do it. So they have to do it this way. Oh, and so, but if not, then I'm thinking, the fuck were you guys doing since May, or probably probably even before May? You know, like,
yeah, it's kind of odd they wouldn't have this thing ready to be shipped out. Like, but I guess that would undercut themselves. You know, they want people, they want to trick people into being like, hey, buy this, and then you can buy this. Not or buy this. It's yeah. And then you can buy this.
Exactly. You know, it's like, I would, like, to me, and to me, I'm not going to buy the Rogue Cut, because as far as I'm concerned, she lost her power, so she has no significance in Days of Futures Past. I know there's an alternative deleted scene in X-Men 3 where Rogue does get her, she doesn't take the cure. I know that for a fact. I know that. But in terms of canonically of what happened, she lost her powers and she said, I'm not a mutant anymore. I am through with this. I am done with this. And it, one of the many stupid decisions in X-Men The Last Stand. But, you know, it, to me, she...
Well, I mean, you can sympathize with her position, at the very least her position.
I know, considering what she went through to become an X-Man and everything. I'm like, now you decide to give up? Like,
well, because now there's a cure. There wasn't a cure when she first kicked in with the X-Men.
I can't. I'm sorry. It's like, I figured you, like to me, it's like you've been just waiting to backpedal on the situation. It makes Rogue look like a weaker character, in my opinion. That you've, like, you were scared at first, but you found confidence in these people who are now your family, and you throw it all away because this is easier, you know? And I get, you know, she's a teenage girl. At least she's supposed to be a teenage girl. But at the same time, it made her look
supposed
like...
supposed to be a teenage girl. Yeah, she's been lying to us this entire time. She's not really a teenage girl.
I don't know how she's supposed to be in the movies. I haven't watched X3 in so long. But I know that she...
You can catch it every other weekend on FX.
Is it? Well, that's like the
same. Yeah, they had that. They ran that for a while. Like, you couldn't turn on the station on the weekends without seeing that movie playing.
Yeah, well...
I mean, to watch the movie itself is bad enough, but the cable cut?
It takes forever. That's why I'm happy for Blu-ray.
Yeah, no shit.
But, you know, I love Anna Paquin, and I wish she got a better chance at... And I wish she wasn't cut from the movie. Like, I wish there was a reference to her, a scene. But, like, I'm wondering, like... The thing I'm wondering is... She wasn't in any of the battle sequences. She wasn't at the beginning sequence, was she? I don't remember. It's been so long since the movie came out.
She was totally absent. And so, actually...
They're going to have to literally... Unless she's in... She must have been in those group battle scenes... Or somewhere else, because there was nothing.
Do you not know what her character was supposed to be in the movie? Because they actually were never shy about that. They actually released a...
I don't know. I would assume she, through some magical bullshit, that she got her powers back.
Can I spoil you?
Sure, go for it.
Spoilers! Remember when Wolverine cut Kitty?
Yeah.
Apparently what they do is Iceman and Magneto both go and locate Rogue... and break her out of a mutant camp because she can assume Kitty's powers and take over for her as she's beginning to fade out due to blood loss and trauma.
Huh.
That was Rogue's role in the movie. She was going to take Kitty's place and continue
mission.
So Rogue
got her powers back somehow.
Mm.
Well, Magneto got his powers back too, so...
Yeah, it was alluded to that the cure wasn't really a permanent thing, but that was never touched upon because Brett Ratner was at the franchise. You know?
Well, I mean, at the end of X3, when Magneto's in Central Park, he kind of moves that metal chest piece ever so slightly. So basically it was like, I didn't really work, you know, so that, I guess...
And considering he got stuck with like 4 needles and she only got one,
Anna Paquin's role is basically just taking over Kitty to, like, okay, tag out. Tag in.
Pretty much, yeah. It's like a tag team match. Like, come on, Kitty, reach for the tag, reach for the tag, and she's in with the freshman, and here comes the clothesline, and ta-da, ta-da, ta-da.
Yeah, okay, but, like, then why cut her from the movie? That wouldn't have, I don't understand. To me, it has to be bigger than that. Her role, to cut her entirely from the movie, her role had to have been bigger than that. I'm sorry, that just seems a little too hard for me to believe.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but look, here's the thing. It's going to be on YouTube. I'll watch that cut from at least those scenes.
Oh, come on.
I'm already buying the regular version of the movie. I love Days of Futures Past. It's a great X-Men movie, you know, up there with X2. I think even better than X1. But I'm not interested. Are you gonna wait now for the Rogue cut, or are you gonna just buy the Days of Futures Past version that I'm buying?
I'll wait. Probably because I've seen the movie a couple times, so I'm not in a big hurry to go out and buy it, but also because I just like Anna Paquin. That's really just a lot of what it is for me.
See, again, this all goes, I don't hate her. I haven't seen her much. I know, like, what, True Blood is her thing, right?
Yeah, well, that actually just ended, okay. So, yeah.
But see, like, all I've known her is Rogue from the X-Men, and she's always, and, you know, I wish she had a bit more Southern accent, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like she was in the Bayou or something like that.
A little bit. Like, I think, like, she has a little bit of that twang in the first one, but it kind of disappears in the two and especially three. Three is like, I'm just a white girl.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I wish she would have just said Sugar more, you know? How you doing, Sugar? You know, just, like, she's stereotypically Southern, and I love that about Rogue, and don't get me wrong, I can understand why I didn't do it, but, like, a little, like, Sugar, you know? Just, like, it didn't hurt the movie.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt that. So, but I will not be buying the Rogue cut unless I hear, like, what I might do is I might, like, trade it in or something or sell it and get some of the money back and use that money towards Days of Futures Past, the Rogue cut, and then maybe it's a complete movie. I don't know.
Hey,
if it doesn't, if it hints towards X-Men Apocalypse, then it has my money. Like, if it shows more scenes, then it has my money, but it doesn't. So there you go. Let us know in the comments if you're going to buy the Rogue cut of Days of Futures Past. All right, Brian, what do we got next?
All right, also dipping into the world of the Mutant Menace, if you're a conservative politician.
Down with the muties. Down with the muties.
Yeah. Well, we can still talk about this, right? Yeah, we can talk about this. Apparently, Bendis is tweeting some new, or teasing, I should say, a new mutant team, or event, rather, some sort of title, allegedly possibly called the Utopians. They released a little black and white image online, and it featured the likes of Colossus, Pixie, Forge, Callisto of the Morlocks, Spiral from Uncanny X-Force, and Shatterstar, among others, all gathered together under one
Shatterstar
and banner.
A little bit of an update to his classic costume.
A little bit, yeah. He looks like he's in SWAT gear from his classic costume.
Like, he still has, like, it's weird because, I'm sorry, we're focusing on Shatterstar. I love X-Force, so suck it.
No, please, go right ahead.
But, like, he had both shoulder pads, you know, and he was big and burly. But only one of them is there. It's like, why not just remove the other one?
It's in the 90s, Ben.
No, I know that, but, like, this new design just doesn't work. And I don't know if they're trying to be, like, mocking the
90s. I'm surprised they bothered to bring him back at all.
He's been around. I mean, he was an X Factor. It's so weird that it's been a while since I've seen him in that costume. And so,
yeah, it's a bit jarring, I suppose, to say the least.
I don't know. What do you think about this new team?
I'm not really sure what to think. There's a lot of moving parts that we just don't really have anything for yet. So we'll just use a little black and white image, and it's just, you know, it's kind of cool. But, you know, the whole concept of all these people thrown in together, I admit, seeing Colossus and Forge together on the same team gave me a nostalgia for Cable and the X-Force back when
it was starting. You mean an extremely short nostalgia?
Oh, yes. I'm short-sighted with most of my nostalgia, but goddammit, that book was exemplary.
I'm just happy Colossus is, like, where the fuck is Colossus?
He's over in Amazing X-Men right
okay,
now.
Okay, so he's back with the X-Men again.
Yes, like, he's at the Jean Grey school.
Still have that power problem?
No, he's regular Colossus again.
Okay, did they ever resolve that?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Because, like, I mean, I don't really remember because I haven't read the. I don't remember because they explained it in that run. But, like, you remember he couldn't control his the metal skin power. He couldn't control it for a while.
Yeah, he was like blotchy and stuff.
So it's like, and I know that had to have been a side effect from the Phoenix Force because everybody else got fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then it's kind of like weird for Colossus to not, you know, have, like, to get some kind of resolve from that. You know, like, he's the only member of the Phoenix Force 5 to not have any legitimate fallout and recovery from that. You know, Cyclops has become something, Emma Frost has become something, Magneto has definitely become something. Magic's pretty much the same, right?
I don't think she actually had anything happen to her.
It's the two Rasputins who really haven't really had a change, at least that I've seen. I could be wrong.
I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. Like I said, it's kind of an odd ensemble when you think about it. It's kind of almost like the almost like a no man's land of just X-Men characters who haven't been used in so long, and all of a sudden they just kind of show up on a team together. It's kind of like, okay, I guess. Sure, why not?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, Spiral alone makes me scratch my head. I know she was over in Uncanny X-Force for a little while, but I was just like, what?
Who's the person above Shatterstar with the tattoos?
I honestly don't know. It's hard to tell from the way he's blocking the person.
It looks
but...
like he has wings in the back. I'm like, it's not Angel, so he has longer hair. Is that Domino in the bottom right?
Supposed
to be Domino?
No, I don't. I mean, unless they left out the spade around her eye. I don't think so.
Okay, I thought that was Domino for a second. And who's the guy with spikes? Oh, is that
I think that's Mero.
No. Above Warlock, that's Adam X.
Oh.
You don't know who
Adam X. Oh, is that who that is?
That's Adam X. Those horrible, horribly designed razor
shoulder pads. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Only reason I know it's Adam X is because Bendis and Tom Brevoort on Twitter were getting shit about Adam X. And they would just tweet that image. And I'm like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, you should see his costume in full color. It's pretty horrible. Like, what the fuck were you guys thinking?
Oh, jeez.
All right, so I don't know. I won't buy it. I'm only reading the X-books that matter and that are, at least to me, are all new and uncanny.
Yeah.
And both of those are losing their touch a little bit. Just a bit. So what else? What else do we got? Any more X-Men news?
No, that's it for the muties for right now. We're going to shut them off back into their camp for right now, and we're going to move on.
God damn it.
Yeah.
I bet you in the NFL, in the... There's like, you know how like there's the Washington Redskins controversy. I bet you there's like the Washington Mutants or whatever or something. I bet you there has to be. Like you would think Washington Muties.
The New York Muties.
The New York Mutants.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Like I'd imagine in my own sick mind that's what's happening. That there's a team called the Mutants.
That is awful. But then again, it's also kind of an interesting image of like who they would use as their mascot. That really intrigues me.
Yeah.
Like, is it just Wolverine? Do they have a team called the Wolverines and it's just Wolverine as the mascot?
Does Wolverine want to sue the University of Michigan for using the Wolverine, considering he's older than the university?
Yeah, I know.
Right? Like
not to mention he's Canadian, so...
He's, like, right there.
Yeah.
It's his colors, too. I'm pretty sure that's where they got the color from.
God, if that's really true, we just uncovered a huge conspiracy theory.
No, I mean, like, it makes sense. Like, look at the Michigan Wolverines, blue and yellow.
Oh, yeah, I definitely
see
it.
Len Wein, and, you know, they were around way before he showed up in the comic book, so Len Wein must have Wolverines, turns into TV, Michigan versus Ohio State, blue and yellow. There you go. If I ever go to a convention and Len Wein is there, I'm going to ask him, like, was that on it? Is that what you were going through your mind? Because that's just... Yeah, maybe that's why they made him to brown and red or whatever, the brown and yellow costume, to make it away from that, to make him more distinct. I don't know. All right, let's move on.
Alrighty then, moving right along. We're going to get serious here for a minute, folks. We're going to talk a legal case, one you've probably no doubt heard about if you're at all a Marvel fan. This is the case of Marvel Entertainment v. the Kirby Estate. And you've no doubt heard about the ups and downs of... how this has gone from a matter of copyright into just this whole ordeal about Kirby's heirs possibly trying to get more money for these characters that he created, because make no mistake, his contribution, he helped build the Marvel Universe. There's no way around that. But at the time, he wasn't getting the money or the recognition he deserved. And
he fucked over a lot of people.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
Well, I mean, just like DC Comics. Well, to be fair, you know, I know this hasn't related to it, but like, you know, when Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster signed for their contracts, to put it in perspective, they were paid pretty well. It's just that neither could see the, you know, explosion that would be, you know.
Who would ever think that this many years on we would have an entire cinematic universe based around these characters that made more money than the third world has put together, more than most countries, you know? This is a GDP to be jealous of.
I mean, you know, let's face it. You know, a lot of it, while Stan came up with some of the ideas, Jack gave visual... I mean, I always believe Jack should Jack, maybe not his, I don't know his family, because just because that's a tricky thing. Like, what
Yeah,
would have...
the whole thing about heirs seeking money is a whole different matter, because then there's that lingering question, is it just about the money? Do they want more money for what their father, grandfather,
I mean,
whatever?
It's hard to not argue that, because when you look at how much they're making, then again,
Yeah.
you don't hear Steve Ditko going out, like, or is he in court over Spider-Man, over the rights of Spider-Man?
Ditko,
Or is he
I
fairly
think
compensated?
I'm pretty sure he's fairly well. I think he gets a credit in most stuff that he does.
Yeah, because we didn't see a credit, or did Jack Kirby get a credit in Avengers? Because he
I
should
don't.
have.
I think he might have got like a special thanks to or something like that. I don't think he got an actual credit
He should
though.
have. I mean, he and Stan Lee co-created the Avengers. You know?
Yeah, I know.
I say he wouldn't deserve that for, say, X-Men, because that was just a title they both worked on. I don't even think Stan should get a credit for X-Men. That's Len Wein and Chris Claremont and Dave Cockrum and John Byrne's book.
It's one thing to create the title; it's another thing to give it life.
Exactly. To me, Jack Kirby's the king, and to me, you know,
not just you. He's king.
Jack King Kirby, who I think he just
Hell
celebrated
yes.
his birthday a couple weeks ago. Either way, I'm happy that it's hopefully finally resolved. That
disputes
are done, the heirs get their money, Jack gets the recognition that he deserves, and you know, everything goes according to plan. But because, you know, we as much as Stan Lee is, you know, like, hey, how are you? I created Spider-Man. You know, I wrote Thor. You know, it's like you.
He's like the fanboy ambassador.
Yeah,
really,
but you wouldn't have. But comic books are also a visual medium. And,
oh yeah,
you know.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, Jack Kirby isn't the finest artist, but damn it, he's great. You wouldn't have a Marvel Universe without Jack Kirby. I mean, just look at. I just have to point out to their Fantastic Four run, and a lot of what made that run special is the shit that Kirby would pull out, not Stan's stories, but it's Kirby giving them those extra flair, you know.
Yeah. I think there was a story, and I can't remember exactly where I heard it, but it's one story where I'm pretty sure it was Fantastic Four. While Jack Kirby and Stan Lee were working together, there reached a point in the relationship where Stan Lee would do, like, sentence-long synopses for a single issue, and Jack would just run with it. Yeah, of course.
And it wasn't just Jack, it was everybody. Like Stan would tell him the plot. Jack or Steve or John Romita or who's another Don Heck, any other Silver Age artist, Marvel early artist, would draw it to the best of abilities, and Stan would come back and fill it with word balloons. That's how a lot of early Marvel comics were done, which is crazy when you think about it. Especially now that you hear about, you know, like full page, 20 page scripts. Extra detail when Jack standing, it was, they're basically kind of flying on the seat of their pants in a bit.
Yep. Well, I think that the story is not there to, you know, it's mostly to illustrate the fact that Jack Kirby really put his heart's work into these things. He crafted these stories that were just, for their time, amazing, and even still, they continue to be, you know, visionary and, you know, stimulating today, and I think he deserves all the recognition in the world for that.
Yeah, and if anything, and this sucks that I'm about to say this, but if it's anything that anybody getting the comics now, you know, and there's still actually, obviously, there's still people who got fucked over, like Tony Moore got a little fucked over with The Walking Dead. You know, he wasn't receiving enough credit. So borderline is, if you're a comics person and, you know, you may, your comic may or may not become a hit, always make sure you it's in the contract that you will get this much amount of money, you know, or you will receive credit. That make sure you read your contracts and don't just sign them. You know, if there's anything any person should take away from the Siegel Schusters, the Jack Kirby's, any of these characters, that read your contracts, look at your contracts. Make sure it's fair to you and not just to the publisher or the writer. You know, that's all. I think that's the biggest thing anybody could take forward, because there's no changing it now. You know, Jack's gone, unfortunately, and he can never have that back. But use this as an example to go forward. Like, this is what you, and it's not all Jack's fault. It was a different time, but use it as you don't want to go like this. You know.
Yeah, I hear that. And really, that's why they pursued it, because work changed, but I think Marvel kept them under the same conditions, and that was what kind of pissed people off.
And then he went over to DC and created the New Gods.
Yeah, because Marvel was like, no, we can't do that. We need Thor.
Yeah, and if you want some actual, and I will recommend this, if you want a good book about Marvel history, it's not specific about Jack Kirby, but if you want a good book about Marvel history and just how much of a asshole Stan Lee kind of was, I don't know how he is now, but at least back then, according to his peers, read
He is America's grandpa, okay? He well, is fantastic.
Now he is, but back then he wasn't considered so much. But go read Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe. That does a great job of getting you inside of the early days of Marvel and just sort of what kind of pool you were dealing with. And you get the – and especially gets especially when it hits the 80s, the animosity between Stan and Jack. It's kind of just discomforting to read, but it's interesting nonetheless. So let's move on. One final thing, right?
Yep, this is the one you want to bitch about, Iggy. Recently, there was a rumor circulating that there was perhaps talks of Avengers 3 being split into two different films to be aired at different dates, a la Harry Potter, The Hobbit, Twilight, Hunger Games, etc., etc.
I kind of believe Matrix.
Oh, I totally believe they would do it too. The article says that their source had told them that the battle between Thanos will play out over two films. It could simply be that Avengers 4 will be needed to win the day, or that the third film will be subdivided, but they're leaning towards the part 1, part 2 tech deal instead of dragging it out over two films.
I hope they don't call it part 1, part 2. I hope they just call it Avengers something else, and then Avengers
they should, yeah, do like,
else. Don't
do
call
what
it
they've done with Thor and Captain America and whatnot. You know, not Captain America 2, it's Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Exactly.
Not Thor 2, it's Thor the Dark
One. Yeah, I think I would feel much, because like when I see Harry Potter Deathly Hallows part 1, I'm like, really?
Yeah,
and that's the movie that didn't deserve to be split up into two parts.
Twilight didn't deserve to be split up into two parts.
I didn't see that movie, so I don't know.
I've watched plenty of reviews and vlogs about it so much that I pretty much have seen the movie without seeing the movie. So,
and I think I haven't seen, and I'm interested to see how if Mockingjay falls into that unfortunate same trap where the first half is just boring, because that's unfortunate. That's where can it lead to? You know, so like, to me, it'd be a little easier to take if they don't call, and I don't think they will, if they call it Avengers something and an Avengers this, you know, like Avengers versus Thanos, or then the final one is Avengers Infinity Gauntlet. I don't know. I have nothing to speculate in the title. Maybe they're doing it because rumor, you know, we've all been hearing rumors that they want to include, not only Guardians of the Galaxy, but maybe Doctor Strange will be in it. And, of course, Ant-Man in some fashion. I don't know what he'll do against Thanos, but I think it'd be cool to see him there. To see all
he'll crawl in his ear and annoy him. Yeah.
Hey, he can make him throw up that way, crawl in his and you know hit his thing.
If he's wired like humans are, that might just piss Thanos off.
He's humanoid. Whatever.
He is not a human, okay?
He's humanoid.
Oh, my God,
He's humanoid.
He is of Titan. Okay. He is an alien.
But he's humanoid looking though. He's not human.
That shit is not human.
Whatever.
The point is Skrullian.
Like I think like maybe like part one is Avengers versus Thanos, you know, and then part two is the rematch, but this time the Guardians of the Galaxy show up, or at least maybe not all of them, and just that way they can pay everybody, because the payout will be bigger. I don't know, but I'm skeptical. I am very skeptical, because you better give me a movie from start to finish that, you know, that doesn't feel like I need to watch the second part, you know?
Like
if you want to continue it, and it just so happens to be coming.
You have to have enough content to fill two films where you're like, oh, shit. And then it's like, oh, I need to watch the next one. Oh, shit. You
like,
need to
like
have
Lord of the
that.
Rings. Like Lord of the Rings. There you go. Like that. Maybe not that long, but, you know, where they finish one particular thing, but there's a bigger mission in mind. So they may have stopped Thanos or one of Thanos' generals from invading Earth, but then the bigger fight is in space. And then that's when the Guardians of the Galaxy show. I'm wary of this idea. If they call it Avengers versus Thanos or Avengers Infinity Gauntlet Part 1 and Avengers versus Infinity Gauntlet Part 2, I'll be pissed because then they're going to release a Blu-ray of them individually, and then they're going to release a super Blu-ray that's going to be all together. It's going to be like,
don't forget the Phase 2 box set and then the complete Marvel Edition box set.
It's like come the... Well, they won't release that until their whole thing is done, so...
Well, Avengers 2 is going to be the end of Phase 2. So then they're going to reissue Phase 1 with Phase 2, and that'll be a whole new box set.
That's true. It's money, 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 money.
And you know what? They're going to get it, too.
That's true.
Because every fan geek needs to upgrade.
Yeah. I still, even though I own the movies, I still kind of want that sweet box and the power and the Tesseract. That, it just seems cool.
Yeah.
What do you think, Brian? Any last thoughts before we move on?
Yes. Give me a Black Widow movie.
I would like a Black Widow movie.
I would love a Black Widow.
Black Widow would be kick-ass.
Also, just as a
not
little...
even Hawkeye. Fuck Hawkeye. Just Black Widow.
You know what they could do? They could put the two in a movie together and be like Widowmaker, but after her first solo flick. She deserves a solo flick.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they could do like a Black Widow Hawkeye team up thing like Widowmaker, like they did with Marvel Comics back in.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I know this wasn't infused, but did you see the official reveal of Mockingbird for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I did not.
Yeah, she's not blonde. She's black hair. She has black hair now, or brunette.
I am looking it up as we speak.
So I know obviously this is off tangent. I still have yet to watch the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, but I remember I saw the press and I was like, huh, that's gonna and it doesn't piss me off because you know a character would be different despite their hair color. But I was interested that they didn't go with her typical blonde hair.
I like how they went out of the way to replicate Victoria's hands, like, pink streak of hair, but they won't even bother dyeing her hair blonde for a Mockingbird.
Well Adriana Palicki is blonde, so maybe... I don't know.
Well, I'm like you. I really don't care. All I care about is her eventually meeting Clint Barton one day. Not even putting them in a relationship. Just have them interact with each other would be fantastic.
Yeah, maybe Clint Barton will be a guest star. Maybe. What's his name? Jeremy Renner?
Jeremy Renner. Or I mean, what the fuck is he doing nowadays? I heard Matt Damon's taking back the Bourne franchise, so he isn't going to be doing that for much.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, he wants to get back into Bourne, so I think Jeremy Renner's on the outs with that.
But they ended that story. Like, Bourne found out who he was. There's no point.
Yeah, but they've been talking about bringing back the original director, too, and they're going to create a new story where they can bring back Jason Bourne.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool. Okay, this is off tangent, but as much as I like the last two Bourne movies, you know what the problem those movies had? Shaky cam out the fucking ass. It's the biggest problem. It's like, you know, it's like having a conversation, but super intense. You know, it's like... Either way, this is not the Bourne podcast.
Learn to use a tripod.
No, it's edgy and mixed action sequence. And I agree, but like, it makes my head hurt after a while. All right, well, so this is going to wrap up the show with our individual reviews.
All right, don't get ahead of yourself. Let's take our time with the damn reviews, man. Jesus.
No, but still, not much.
I got to get your head wrapped around New Avengers. This shit's deep.
All right. Deep. So, Brian, since you're going to have first bat, so there you go. New Avengers, number 24. Has a planet collided with our Earth yet? Why am I still alive?
This, along with Avengers a couple weeks ago, time skipped 8 months ahead to the point where
this
happens.
Oh, yeah. This is Steve still an old man?
Yes. He is now an old man officially.
Okay, so he's not – so technically in 8 months –
continuity's all caught up by this point, basically.
So this happens after Access.
This happens, I think, right on the crux of Access. At least I think that's how it works.
So right before?
I think so.
No, because.
No! Wait, you're right. It's after Access.
It has. So that means. Yeah. So that means everybody who appears and lives. Okay, so no stakes. Yeah. Awesome. Lovely. Yay. Okay.
Last time on New Avengers. Namor was kicked out of the Illuminati for being too extreme in his and his friends' plans to destroy planets to save their own universe. So, deciding that he didn't want to die, he decided to go create his own team of supervillains, and they're going to save all the world, and you won't have any fun, etc., etc.
And I'm going to do it with Blackjack and hookers. Actually, forget the super team.
Let's go get Blackjacks and hookers. In fact, forget the Blackjack. Let's just get hookers. And this team included Maximus, Terax, Black Swan.
Oh, because including Maximus is a great idea.
Well, he also included Thanos.
Way to go.
Thanos is on the team.
Way to go, Namor. Way to go. Yeah. Always willing to prove that you.
Oh,
Namor is just the kind of guy who I feel like is just gonna, when the Marvel Universe sets in, he's gonna be the one that ends it. I'm sorry.
Can I? Okay. I gotta tell you this though, because it's gonna be kind of crazy. Okay. Let me get this.
Okay.
So we open with Namor attending a stately dinner in Latveria, hosted by Christoph Bernard and Doctor Doom. Namor is there discussing with Victor how this whole feast they have for themselves is overly decadent and unnecessary. And Doom's kind of like, that's not the way you usually talk. Is something going on? You seem kind of out of place. Well, turns out, 8 months after forming the Cabal, as they were known, it's the second iteration of the Cabal.
They never called themselves the Cabal the first time around, though. I don't think
so. Yeah, they really didn't, but they didn't call themselves the... Well, actually, Namor calls them the Cabal in this one, okay. So... Yeah. Right. So, Namor comes to Doom and pretty much says, look, this is what's been happening. Worlds have been colliding into worlds, and people have been dying, and we've been laying waste to these worlds, et cetera, et cetera. You know
that reminds me of what was the black guy's scene from Ghostbusters? Look, I've seen some shit, okay?
You don't understand. If he had actually said that, I might have bust out laughing, but
I've seen shit, man.
Yeah. I mean, they show these flashbacks of just wholesale slaughter. And Namor is saying that, you know, when we first started out, the Cabal was a means to an end. It was a necessary evil because evil existed and it needed to be eradicated in order to preserve us. But as they've been going on, he realizes that the supervillains he's thrown in with have been liking what they're doing. 8 months in, and he just figures that supervillains are evil. Go figure, right?
Namor, the doom of the Marvel Universe for all. I swear to God. I swear to God, Namor, get your shit together.
So he comes to Victor, and he's kind of like, look, they're unmanageable. They relish the atrocity, and Namor's finally sick of it. He's starting to hesitate a little bit. He's starting to think maybe he's doing it wrong because the people he chose to throw in with are just fucking evil, and they're not going to do anything to help. They're just doing it because they like to kill people. He pretty much comes to Victor and says, I need your help. I need your help, and I would be grateful for it in order to help squash this menace. Let us overtake the Cabal, put these people in prison or somewhere else where they can't be a part of people, and let us, you and I, save the world against all other worlds together. Because he still believes it needs to be done, he just doesn't believe it should be done with glee. That's the thing he's grown distasteful of. Oh. And Doom flat out fucking says no. And the reason he says no is so stupendous. Okay? Namor goes, yeah, everything will fall if we don't step up. And he's pretty much says to him, yeah, well, should have came to me first.
Damn.
Yeah. He pretty much says, you chose to throw in with these psychopaths and sociopaths and violent, bloodthirsty animals, and I can forgive you screwing around with Richards, because that was necessary for you to see the fact that this needed to be done. But then you go to them instead of me? Get the fuck out my door.
Bro,
get the fuck out
bro,
of here.
Bro, I'm wounded, bro. Come on, bro.
Yeah. And he tries to appeal to Christoph, where he's like,
I keep forgetting Doom and Namor have like a weird friendship.
Yeah, they're like allies for the most part. And Doom just flat out says,
in a weird fucked up way, they are allies. They are allies. Despite that Namor fights mainly for good, or fights for himself. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't. They've both gone through characterizations of mainly supervillains, so I guess that's kind of neither here nor there. But yeah, what I love too is Doom closes out his speech, pretty much says, you should have thought of that before, Namor, and more carefully considered your position. You should have known better. Doom is no man's second choice.
Damn.
Yep.
So this is badass Dr. Doom, huh?
He gets up to leave, and Namor goes, Christoph, can't you like talk to him or something? And he just cuts him up like, yeah, it was nice having you, Namor. Good luck with your genocide. And they both walk out on him. Just leave him fucking
there.
Oh,
mad. So like, damn. So Namor got kicked to the curb.
Oh, yeah.
Taking out the trash. All right.
Cut to Earth number -71202.
Is Tony wearing the stupid armor again?
Nope. This is the Cabal doing this one.
Okay.
This is really great. In this
they have
world.
The Infinity Gauntlet? No, those
no.
are gone, right? Those are
the,
gone.
The stone shattered during the first round
That's
of the
That's right. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Ben.
I dropped the book 2 weeks later.
Yeah. So, they're on this world where it appears the X-Men are either the predominant defenders of the world or the only ones left. Because Charles Xavier is wearing an inhibitor. Cyclops and Havoc are dead.
Wait, Charles Xavier's alive?
Oh, he's watching. They're making him watch.
Wait. Charles Xavier is physically
on another world. On another world. This is a different world.
Oh, okay.
This is an incursion.
I'm sorry. My mind just went. Axis just got spoiled. Xavier's alive at the end of Axis.
Yeah, right? No shit. No, in this one, this is a different world, and the incursion's happening, and they're doing what they always do. They're destroying this world so their Earth might live. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. And
the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Pretty much, yeah. Only they're making this guy, they're just torturing him. They've got him on the ground on his knees with a mental inhibitor, making him watch as they slaughter all his students. And Terax, the tamer, is just sitting there on a throne using the dead skulls of Zorn and Zorn. I don't know if this is Ultimate, but it alludes to it because there were two different Zorns on there. And he's using the skulls to talk back and forth and pretty much degrade Charles Xavier. This is what the value of being Valiant, Father. Was it enough that I tried, or will my failure define me? Oh, don't worry about that. You mean failure implies some chance of success, and Terax is just going back and forth with these skulls, making them talk, and then he goes... And then they kiss, and they're just shoving this guy's nose in it. And what I love is that they decide to close this out. Thanos is sitting there with the bomb, ready to detonate this world and just kill it, right? But Thanos isn't doing that yet. Terax steps up to the guy, and he's like, you know what? All he nearly needs to make your suffering less, less bad, I guess, is that... He just needs one little thing, one little offering. He's like, what? He kind of wants you to beg for it.
Damn.
Yeah, beg, and he'll kill you quickly. That's your promise. And Terax chimes in again. I'm sorry, no, that wasn't Terax who said that. That was another guy. But then Terax chimes in. But how do you know he won't make you suffer? You're already dead. We pretty much told you that. But how can you have his guarantee that he won't fill up to his promise? And moreover, if you know he won't live up to it, would you do it anyway? And seeing Cannonball and Wolfsbane, who are now dragged in, just being manhandled and torn to bits, he finally just goes, please kill me, and breaks down crying. And Thanos stands there with the smuggest grin on his face, just...
The classic grin.
Yes. Please what? Please kill me! Ha! And that just gets Thanos right the hell off.
God damn it, you sick fuck.
And we're only about halfway through the book at this point.
Jesus
so fun.
Christ.
Yeah. So we arrive at Wakanda. And I was actually kind of thrown for a loop for a minute because I didn't realize what had happened. But I'm trying to piece it together based on what I read last week in Avengers, the other time skip book. So try and follow me on this because I'm really not sure on the details myself. I'll consult with Taser when I see him again. I'm pretty sure what happened is we zoom in on Wakanda, and it's leveled again. Like, even worse than when the Phoenix dropped the fucking bombshell on the place. It is wrecked. It is called the Fallen City of Wakanda. It is just destroyed. Smoking and ruin on fire, all that stuff. And Black Panther and his sister Shuri, Queen of Wakanda, or what's left of it, rather, are leading a strike force into where the Illuminati used to meet up, in the catacombs, which is, or I should say, not the catacombs, what's it called? Give me a second while I find the name. Necropolis, thank you. Yeah, City of the Dead. So, the reason why they went there is because Maximus is bunkered there with all the planet-killing bombs stashed away there. And pretty much what they're going to try and do is Black Panther... Shuri and the force of Panther soldiers are going to try and infiltrate this base and retrieve all the bombs and steal them, not so that they can stop them, although that's definitely a part of it, but so that Shuri can hold the bombs over the Cabal's head and shame them and fuck with them as they have fucked with her. Because as I've gathered it, the Cabal pretty much said, we'll keep killing plants to you, and announced this to the world. And said, you only got to do one thing. Just level Wakanda for us and we'll be square. And they did it. In exchange for protection against multiverse incursions, the world turned on Wakanda and destroyed it. At least that's what I've been able to gather from this. So, they infiltrate this place and attempt to steal these bombs, but lo and behold, Maximus is there. Yeah, he's there. And he is there with Proxima Midnight, one of the servants of Thanos.
He's still alive? I thought he was killed.
Proxima Midnight's a woman.
Well, I thought she was killed in Infinity.
Nope, she's still kicking around, and she's with the Cabal now.
I did like her design, so that's cool.
Yeah. Basically, her and Maximus ambush these guys. Turns out that the reports they were being fed of who went on the incursion, because they planned this around them not being there and not having to put up much of a fight, but turns out they were fed false reports. Because, as Proxima Midnight says, you can't believe those incursion reports you get fed, human. They gave us your city. You think the people who rule this world wouldn't lie every single time about who is and who is not off-world during an event? Just for their own security? Just to fuck you over? And so, Black Panther and Shuri are the only two left. They flee into the ruins of Wakanda, and Black Panther reaches out to Reed, who is, if you didn't read Avengers, pretty much the entire Illuminati is outlawed. They're on the run. They're fugitives.
Oh, really? Well, like, why are they on the run?
There wasn't much detail given. I think it was because of what happened with the incursions. Again, I'm not entirely sure. I have a couple of theories. One of them being the most obvious is that the entire world got wind of the crimes and just decided to go after them. But after...
You guys are the reason we're in this mess. Fuck you.
But one, this is just a fan theory I have. One thing I thought of is that based on what I've learned here about the world basically destroying Wakanda in exchange for their protection, and also... In Avengers, Sue Storm is collaborating with S.H.I.E.L.D. to bring down the Illuminati, right?
Including her husband?
Yes, yes.
Damn!
Okay, but listen to this. In that comic, she's wearing the helmet, and the helmet design looks a lot like the Ultron helmet thing that was in Avengers a while back, right? The Ultron run world. Now, that I'm sure that's just like a stepping stone or whatever, but what I'm thinking is, I think the world is trying to track down the Illuminati to stop them from trying to stop the Cabal. That's just a fan theory, though. I honestly have no idea. I mean, it's a Hickman book.
The time gives is like, what the fuck happened?
I know. It's like, there's so much shit left out, but yeah.
It's 8 months, but it doesn't seem like long, but when you realize shit time has passed, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Oh, and by the way, the one they capture from the Illuminati on the Avengers issue is Amadeus Cho. He gets inducted into the group.
Oh, wow. That's a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering whatever happened to him.
Yeah, turns out he's working with the Illuminati
now.
Does
he still have the dog?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Aww, he had a puppy with him when I last time I was reading him. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I remember that back in World War Hulk. Good times. And Reed has a beard now, so that's cool.
Well, not surprising.
Yeah. Okay, so they flee into Wakanda, and Shuri pretty much says, you know, that they're going to come after us. You have to get back to the Illuminati and figure out another plan to stop these bastards. You go. I'll hold them off. Shuri stands alone against Proxima Midnight, Maximus, and all the drones he's been able to invent to level planets. And she leaps into the fray, not choosing the coward's death, but pretty much assuredly going to die. And the end of the story cuts back to Latveria. Doom and Christoph watched Namor fly off. And after he leaves, Doom and Christoph retreat into a bunker established beneath Castle Doomsdad or whatever. And there, they have the Mad Thinker working for them, as well as an entire team of scientists and technicians. And they single in on this piece of rock. And during the very first incursion, or one of the very first, I should say, I'm not sure if it was the very first, there was a siege on Latveria because their defenses were able to hold off the energy that the ones behind it, the map makers, were attempting to use to just, you know, sort of soften the world up, I guess, right? So they were laying siege to Castle Doom. And Doom took a chunk out of their forces, of course, because he's fucking Victor Von Doom. But also, after the destruction of the planet, they have a piece of the dead Earth that the Illuminati killed. And he's studying it, and pretty much what they've been able to do They've been able to isolate the harmonic frequency, it says, that the planet vibrates at, sort of like a multiverse like in DC, you know?
Uh-huh.
The whole Flash concept where he can vibrate in different planes. Pretty much what they can do now, they reverse engineered it, and Doom can now pinpoint every single alternate universe, backtrack it, and discover not only who has the tech that was initially, you know, overseeing these incursions,
mm-hmm.
and he can pretty much go anywhere he wants with the right tech. And how can he do that? He's got the fucking Molecule Man working for him.
Are you kidding me?
You know, he's got the Molecule Man in his basement working for him to help decipher the multiverse conundrum they're working on. Because as far as I can tell, Doom's going to take the fight to the Cabal himself. Whether or not that's for his gain is probably going to be almost assuredly that, but Doom's in it for himself, and he's got the Mad Thinker working logistics, the Molecule Man working materials and tech, and Doom's got a pretty fucking tricked out place. And shit's going to get heated fast, because remember, excuse me. This is one issue. We already have Namor plotting the downfall of the group, and we have the death of more Earths. We have Black Panther retreating to the Illuminati to talk about his failure, and we have Doom with the Molecule Man in his corner. It's gone crazy. And this issue was fucking bonkers. Like, I will say, though, that the only thing that really worked against it, because writing's top-notch as usual. Hickman does a great job. So does Valerio Schiti, is back on art.
I'm sorry. That's
such I know.
That's as bad as Dennis Hopeless.
Yeah.
You know,
Valerio Schiti on art, yeah.
Some guy probably pronounces it that way.
Yeah.
Hey, Schiti, how you doing?
Well, however you pronounce it.
I wonder
it.
If he works at Schiti Walk.
Schiti Walk, but I have Schiti Chicken, Schiti Rice.
God damn it. Mm. Continue.
Yeah. The only thing that really works against the issue is the time jump, as I said. And as you said, because with Hickman...
I think that's the point, though.
I know. And I know it is the point. But the thing with Hickman is reading from month to month gets difficult if you haven't picked up every issue. Reading with when there's a time jump, it's like you missed everything and are reading a brand new book. So, but like you said, that's kind of the point. The point is to lay all this ground for stuff to come later and to tease you a little bit, so I don't really hold that against the book. It was a really top-notch issue. And it was just mind-boggling how that how much shit went down in this one issue and how much we missed and we didn't get to see, and yet will still happen. That's going to be fucking bomb, let me tell you. So I'm very pleased with the book as it is. I think they did a great, great job. And compounding that with Avengers, I'm not sure how much overlay there was intended to be, but there was enough there that has me thinking some things, like that theory I spotted earlier, you know. And I think that's an important thing to have in your titles, because if you have something that gets fans thinking and has them intrigued, obviously I'm going to come back for the next issue. So, whereas before in this book, now everything died, screaming and bloody and whatnot, because Namor just had to go and form himself a supervillain group. And now he's upset because he can't control it. Boo fucking who. I give it a 5 out of 5. Real, real solid issue. I enjoyed it a lot.
I swear, every time I hear about New Avengers, it's like, why did I drop it? And, you know,
you know what it is, man? It's a lot of shit going on.
You know, that's the thing, and like, I feel like I'm gonna like it a lot better when there's like a nice hardcover. I mean, there's hardcovers out, and I just haven't bought them, but I liked what I read, and it seems interesting, but it's like, you're asking me to keep up with, you know, not just New Avengers, but Avengers as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a lot to keep up on, so... I look for the inevitable omnibus collection because you know it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, this has to be an omnibus at some point. Like, this is going to be heavy reading.
All right. Yeah. And I'm going to close out the show with a review that technically was done, but because of the fuck-up...
The lost episode.
Yes, feel the lost episode. Miss Marvel number 8. You know, I've heard a lot about this book. You know, people, podcasts that I listen to or just people at my comic shop. And you know what? I had a light week when it came out. So I said, you know what? let me check this out. And I have to say, you know, I haven't been reading. This feels like not Spider-Man exactly, but in terms of that young Ultimate Spider-Man, that young hero getting into new things, getting familiar with yourself with the powers, but also trying to deal with daily life. You know, it feels a lot like that with that same kinetic energy. So Kamala, who apparently is her name, she's Muslim American, and she also has a. She's an Inhuman, or she was, and through the events of Infinity, after events of Infinity, she was awoken because of the Terrigen Mist. So, she's kind of she's a fanfic writer. She's a super fan. You know, she was like
she's a fangirl basically.
She's a fangirl. She's an awesome. She's like one of those awesome fan people. But like the kind of like if you know a fan person in real life, I'm like, okay, calm down. This issue, it opens up pretty hilariously by people thinking they're running away from a monster, and she turns around and like she goes, "Oh, look at you!" And it's Lockjaw, and Lockjaw literally has a sign on his neck that says, "Hello, my name is Lockjaw. I like hugs." And
oh my God.
So it's like the last panel of like the second page is her just giving Lockjaw the hug, and she brings him home. You know, like, can I keep him? You know, and like, they're like, it's like, he's freaking huge.
Fuck is Black Bolt in all this?
I don't even.
Any responsible pet owner.
I think they sent, I flipped through the last issue prior to this, and I think they sent Lockjaw her away to find her. I didn't read what reason, but I'm pretty sure the Inhuman sent her. So basically they said, all right, you can keep her, but your allowance is going to go through it. And so... Lockjaw is basically going to be her partner from now on, and she.
What?
Yeah, it looks like it. And so, she also has a friend who works at a grocery store, and she's like, apparently there's been kidnappings of some students from her high school by this guy called the Adventurer. I don't know who he is. He's not revealed in this issue. I think he's shown up in a previous issue, but again, didn't read it. So. like she's like doing all this stuff in front of her friend, you know, like showing off her superpowers, showing off her giant teleporting puppy, and like the guy's like, I want a refund on life. I have to wash dishes while you get to go be a superhero. What the fuck?
Boo fuckity hoo.
Yeah, so she uses Lockjaw, who apparently can fly or leap really far. And so is her partner in crime, and they get into a fight against this giant mech, and apparently she's a shapeshifter, so that's her superpower. Unfortunately, Lockjaw does get stomped on, and it's like, oh, but you know,
oh no,
yeah, but he's okay. He's a tough puppy. But apparently the inside the mechanical suit was a student that was missing, so it leads to that. This guy is using students to power up these suits, and Kamala still doesn't know why. It cuts to her being late for school, trying to come up with an excuse. They get attacked, and like she gets caught in the blast, but she was able to heal herself. But after that, for some reason, her powers won't work. So it ends with her. The issue ends with her powers in complete and total flux, which is like, oh no. If you listen to this and you think if you think New Avengers is a little too heavy, or you think a lot of the other stuff is like just way too oppressively dark, or just, you know, just bad shit.
Because there is a shit ton of that New Avengers, folks. It's opposite ends of the spectrum, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. But like, you know, like even Uncanny, you have, you know, Holocaust, you have the Holocaust being recreated for mutants. You have, you know, Cap's an old man. Just a lot of not good things happening in the Marvel Universe. But if you just want a title that's separate, that's in the Marvel Universe, but it's separate, so, you know, it's separate enough. And if you want a new young superhero and heroine to find, she's very funny. It's a very humorous book. It has some good action too, and I really like the art by Alfona. I believe, I don't remember his first name, Alfona, because this person also used to do the art for Captain Marvel right before they relaunched it earlier this year. As I look for the title of the name, I cannot find
it. Take time.
I cannot find
Take it. Time.
But it was just great, like just great action, just very, not cartoony, but very expressionistic. Almost anime inspired, but not really. Sort of like a blend between Western and Eastern styles. But yeah, just a really great fun. And of course, if you're a dog lover, you know, seeing Lockjaw in here is going to be just a pleasure. You know, Lockjaw. Who doesn't love Lockjaw?
Everyone loves Lockjaw.
You know,
he is just a big, wrinkly pitchfork on his head ball of joy and teleports.
So if you like Lockjaw, if you like dogs, and that's what told me on the book, which is her giving, like, the cover is her giving Lockjaw chasing a butterfly and her using her stretching arm abilities to hold on for dear life. So there's that. So yeah, I give Ms. Marvel a 4 out of 5, a well done book and a such a fresh new take on the Marvel Universe, and worthy, and she is worthy of the name Ms. Marvel. I don't think you need to hear me to say that, but I think she's a cool character, and I hope she sticks around for a very long, long time. Hope she gets a movie made about her.
Huh. Good. Good things happening in Ms. Marvel, then. It's a happy, happy, bright, technicolor place, right?
Yep. So, with that, we'll end the show. I don't think that was short, but I think it was short for our normal standards.
I think so. I was able to dissect that new Avengers. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have been able to with Taser and, you know, John on the roster. So that's good.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
it's important you get the message out there. So,
ladies and gentlemen, let us know what you think of Ms. Marvel and New Avengers. Let us know what books you read in the comments below. And of course, hopefully next week we'll be back at full strength as we see the debut of She-Thor, or let's just call her for what she is, Thor, God of Thunder.
Oh, look at you playing ball with the feminists and whatnot.
No, I'm not. I'm just progressive and whatever. Point is, Thor. Look for Thor number one. We're gonna be talking about that next week. So until then, we'll see you for next time for episode number 181. Have a good week, y'all.
As the march towards episode number 200 grows ever closer.
Don't it sound good to you? Don't you agree? Don't it sound good to you? Don't you agree?
Let me switch it up right here. Yeah, I like that. Why? Give me that. I like that. Come on, Elton. Take me to the high level. Higher than that, baby. Higher. Switch it up. I like that. Kill him. Yeah. Ease it out for him. I like that. Now grab your cigar. Grab your lady. Hug her tight and tell her that you love her. It's been a pleasure, y'all. Shock value is now officially over. Me, Elton John, signing out.